We're holding on Samah Ahmed Bey's 13 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday, we started talking about dinim of Eish, and we talked about the point that that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim disagree, which we're going to learn in a later Mishnah, later on Samach Aleph Amud Beis, that the Chachamim say you're potter for tumun if you have you started a fire and then it spread and it burnt something that was hidden, for example, hidden inside the person's stack of grain, then you'd be potter for those items, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayim. So we discussed yesterday the Chachamim learned from the word kama that kama means the standing grain which is uncovered, whereas Rabbi Yehuda had said that kama means something else. So now the Gemara is going to tell a story involving David HaMelech that involves this matter of Tumun and in general this whole matter of the Nezek of Eish. So as background, the it in at near the end of Sefer Shmuel and also in Divrei Hayamim, it lists all of David's giborim, all of the mighty, the particularly mighty warriors who made up David's, who made up the elite units of David's army. So first it mentions three of them, the three top giborim. So now in Sefer Shmuel, it tells about one of them, named Shammah ben Agee, that one time, one particularly notable thing he did is there was a battle going on against the Plishtim. There was a section of a field where they were fighting that was full of lentils, and he saved it, and Hashem, and he saved it and defeated the Plishtim, and there was a tremendous victory. In Divrei Hayamim, it tells almost the identical thing about, although about a different one of the he about a different one of the warriors named Elazar. Where then it says almost the same thing, except that instead of lentils, it says there was a field full of barley. Then the psukim go on to say about these three warriors that one time, these three top ones in David's army, that one time it happened during a time when David was fighting against the Plishtim. He one time says, if only somebody would give me water to drink from the well of Beis Lechem. Now, Beis Lechem is where David grew up. So, see, simple pshat would be, and some of the Mefoshim say this, that it means something along the lines of, not that he seriously expects anybody to go all the way to Beis Lechem to fetch him water. He's just saying, like, you know, sometimes when a person is nostalgic for the olden days, if only I had some of that, you know, I wish I was back in the old days where I had some of that good water from my hometown. Anyway, so can describe both in Shmuel and in Divrei Hayamim that these three mighty soldiers of David broke through the Plishti lines. There was a Plishti encampment there in Beis Lechem, and they broke through the lines and actually did what David was saying, and they went and brought him the water. And the aftermath of that, we'll learn later on in the Sugya. Now, Poshet Pshat is that these are different stories. One time, there's the story with the lentils and the barley, which different Mefoshim on the Psukim talk about. Would that indicate that they were actually two different stories, or is it that the field maybe had both barley and lentils in it, whatever? And then separately, you have the story with David and the water. Here, the Gemara is going to assume that all of it is one continuous story, and it's going to darshan inappropriately. And the pasuk says in the second story, "Vayis'aved David vayoyimah." David had a craving, and he said, "Mi yashkeni mayim mi bor beis lechem asher v'shar." If only somebody would give me water to drink from the water hole, from the water pit of Beis Lechem, which is by the gate. Now, whenever in Tanakh, almost always when we talk about the gate of a city, many times we talk about the local Beis Din, and many other examples of like that, where the Beis Din would sit in the gateway of the city. So therefore, the Gemara is understanding that, first of all, I mean, it's not logical. Why would David be even mentioning that he craves that water? You know, well, okay, we're saying, you know, Mefoshim say nostalgia or whatever, but still, it seems beneath David to be asking to be asking or craving for such a thing. So it certainly wouldn't explain why the soldiers actually went and did it. So therefore, the Gemara is understanding that water, as in many other places, a metaphor for Torah, and the well of Beis Lechem, which is at the gate, means to go ask the Beis Din of Beis Lechem a shaila in halacha. What the shaila was, we're going to discuss soon. So the pasuk continues, "Vayivku shloshas gibonim b'machne flishtim." These three mighty heroes of David's army broke through the plishti camp. "Vayishavu mayim mibobes lechem asher b'shar v'gomer." They actually drew water from this pit of Beis Lechem that was by the gate. Meaning, in other words, that they actually broke through the plishti lines to go present David's shaila and halacha to the Beis Din of Beis Lechem. So the question is, and they brought the answer back to David, and what happened as a result of that, we'll see soon. So first the question is, what was David's question in halacha? So the Gemara brings several opinions. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Tomun ba'esh kamibayle. David had a question about the concept of Tomun that we were saying before. So Ikir of Yehuda, Ikir Abanan. Is the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda or the Rabbanan? Now, of course, he's not asking in those words. Rabbi Yehuda lived 1,000 years later, but the point is, he's asking: is a person potter for what gets burnt as a result of tamon, or is he chayef for it? So Rashi explains that there were actually some of his men had burnt a heap of grain that belonged to a yid. So now the question was, there was tamon inside there, and the question was whether he or his soldiers have to pay for it. In fact, Marsha says that may explain why one pasuk mentions lentils and the other one mentions barley. There may have been that the pile was in fact, now lentils are worth more than barley. So what would have happened is somebody had a pile of lentils over there, and then the outside of the pile was covered with barley. And now the question is, would we say like the Chachamim that we ignore what's inside there, meaning we treat it as though it was just full of the same substances on the outside? In that case, he'd only have to pay for the value of a heap of barley. Or would we say that he would, like Rabbi Yehuda, that he would have to pay for the value of the lentils inside that? Now that's according to Rashi that we're talking about, that it actually happened. There are Mephoroshim who explain that it wasn't necessarily that it actually happened, that it was burnt. Rather, he was asking if it happens in the course of this war, what would be the din? And they answered him whatever they answered him. We don't know whether they answered him the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda or like the Chachamim, but they gave him an answer. And these three mighty soldiers broke through the plishti lines to go ask the shaila and to bring back the answer to David. So that's one explanation. Rav Huna gives a different explanation. What happened was gedishim b'seodim b'Yisrael havu davu matamri plishtim bahu. What happened was there were heaps of barley belonging to Jews that were in that area, and plishtim were hiding inside those heaps of grain. So now. So now David wants to, it'll make it very easy. What we should do is we should set those stacks of grain on fire, and then either the plishtim will be burnt in there, or they'll run out of there, and we'll be able to capture them. So become a boyole. So David's question was, mahu lahatzel atzme b'momen chaveri, or is a person allowed to save himself by means of damaging somebody else's property? Now, a little further, Rashi uses the expression that also lahatzalat atzmei mamon chaveri, which on the face of it means exactly that. It sounds like Rashi is saying flat out that the halacha ended up that the Beis Din told him that such a thing is generally also. However, Tosfos learns that that's not the question. Of course, you're allowed to bekorach nefesh is doicha kola tora kola. Rather, the question was, if they do that, would they afterwards have to pay for the value of what they damaged or not? And in fact, when Rashi is saying over here that also lahatzal atzmei mamon chaveri, and it actually means that you would be, on the face of it, it means that you would actually be also to do it, there are poskim who discuss. It seems very hard to say that. Tosfos has a good point. The pikuach nefesh doicha kol atora kola. How could Rashi be saying differently and say that, and say that you're not allowed to. So there's different explanations about that. One of them is that in fact it means you're not allowed to do it where you're not intending to pay. And there is in fact an explanation that maybe what Rashi means is, you know, according to an opinion of Reb Meir, he says elsewhere that Edom should be ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh and be ready Yehorek Val Yaver rather than testify falsely. So according to that, then maybe Rashi would be talking according to that. But the halacha is not actually like that. So therefore, then you would actually be allowed to. The question would just be like Tosfos is saying: would you have to pay afterwards? So there's a good deal of discussion about that. Another way of looking at it is maybe we're talking about if there's an alternative versus not. According to Rav Huna, that was David HaMelech's question. The Sanhedrin, the Beis Din of Beis Lechem, sent back the answer. Also, lahatzel atzmei mamon chaberei, you're not allowed to do that. Either, again, according to the simple reading of Rashi, means you're actually not allowed to do that. You're going to have to find some other way of flushing out these plishtim. Or according to Tosfos and many other poskim, it means you are allowed to, but you're going to have to pay afterwards. Aval ata, melech ata, but they told David, on the other hand, you're a king, umelech poretz lasis loiderech, that in Mochin B'yadei, we know the halacha is a king is allowed to break through even people's property or people's fences or whatever in order to make a road for his soldiers. And nobody's able to protest because a king has such rights over a king has certain broad rights over people's property to take it for state purposes, for government purposes. The Gemara discusses this point in Sanhedrin and in other places. You have the famous counterexample with Achav and Navos, and in fact, one explanation is precisely because Achav wanted to take Navos's property for his personal use is why Navos was entitled to refuse him. Had Achav told him that he needs it for governmental purposes, then Navos would have been obligated to give it or sell it to him. Anyway, the point is that. The point is then that according to Rav Huna, that was the back and forth over here. David's in the middle of a battle against the Plishtim. He's wondering whether we're allowed to or whether we're going to have to pay for if we burn down these stacks of grain that belongs to Jews in order to flush out the Plishtim. And the answer was technically you're not allowed to, or if you are allowed to, then you're going to have to pay. But you as a king are above that law, and you would be allowed to do it, and you wouldn't be required to pay. V'rabbanan v'itema Rabba bar Mori amru, the other chachamim, or some say specifically Rabba bar Mori, gave a third answer. G'dishim v'se'orin Yisrael habu, there were piles of grain of barley belonging to Jews that were there, just like in the previous answer. But there were also ugdishim da'adoshim de'plishtim. There were also over there piles of lentils that belonged to the plishtim. And become a boil who. So now, which would explain why it is that one pasuk in Shmuel refers to lentils, and the other one in Divrei Hayamim refers to barley, because the two psukim complement one another. And according to this opinion, it means there were both of them. According to the previous opinion that we said he's just asking about the piles of barley of Jews, the Gemara is going to ask soon. According to that opinion, why does the other pasuk mention lentils? So we'll get back to that soon. But anyway, so become a boy of the who. So now they, or specifically David, had the question: Mahu lito gedishin shal sa'ur in Yisrael v'litin lifte behemtoi. Are we allowed to take this barley belonging to the Jews that's in that area and give them to the animals, to the army animals, to feed them? Al manas l'shalem gedishin shal adoshim deplishtim, and the plan will be that they're going to use the lentils belonging to the plishtim to pay back these people. Like this, lentils are worth more than barley, so it would be in effect we're saying we're going to confiscate your barley, but we're going to repay you with something more valuable, lentils. So now the Rosh actually says that we don't mean they already have the lentils available. Then there's no question such a thing would be allowed. To which the tour says, fine, that would only be, though, if they weren't planning to keep the barley for themselves, if they were planning to sell it, if they were planning to keep it for themselves, they may prefer barley. Anyway, but here we're talking about that at least according to the Rosh, we're talking about that the lentils weren't available yet. They knew after they defeat the Plishtim, and they'll be able to do that by giving the animals the barley to eat. That will help them defeat the Plishtim. Then therefore they're going to have they're going to have these lentils available to pay back. According to this opinion, that was the question. And Shochule, according to this version, the Sanhedrin, the Beis Din of Beis Lechem, answered him back by quoting an expression from a pasuk. This pasuk is from Yechezkel, which is long afterwards, of course. But Tosfos, we've learned a Tosfos in Gittin. There's a concept mentioned here and there that people knew, the Chachamim knew of the contents of these psukim even before they were written. Anyway, the Novi describes. Chavoyl Yoshiv Rosha Gzela Yishalem. The Rosha returns the Chavoyl, the mashkin that he took illegally. For example, by going into the person's house, which the Torah says he's not allowed to do. And then Gzela Yishalem, he pays back what he stole. Now, why does it put the word Rosha in the middle? The point is, Afapisha Gzela Mashalem. Even though he does return the Gzela, nevertheless, Rosha, who he stole a Rosha for doing that in the first place. So in other words, we learn from that pasuk that when it's not that a person we don't say a person can do in the first place an avera and then afterwards it's a lava nitakla essa. All he has to do is do the essa to make up for it, and that's it. It's completely cleaned up. Nevertheless, he's a rosha for doing that in the first place, unless of course he does tshuva. The point being, in other words, so yes, you wouldn't be allowed to take that barley from these Jews in order to repay with lentils, because that would be similar to what's described in that pasuk. But again, Avol Melata Melachata, but you being a king or Melach Paritz Lasis LeDerech Vein Mochin B'Yodei, a king is allowed to break through people's properties to make a road, and nobody can stop him. So therefore, that particular rule again doesn't apply to you, and therefore you would be entitled to do that. Okay, so three different opinions what David's shaiva was. Tomun, are you allowed to be matzal atzim and mamon chaveri, or are you allowed to take somebody else's property with intent to repay it with something else? So the Gemara says, Bishleim alamanda amar lechlufi, according to the third explanation that he wanted to exchange the Jews' barley for the Plishtim's lentils, well then, Hainu dechtiv chad kra, bati sham chalkas asada malaya adoshim, dechtiv chad kra, bati chalkas asada malaya sa'urim. Well, that explains easily enough why we have the different psukim in Divrei Yomim and in Shmuel. And in Divrei Yomim, where in Shmuel it says that there were lentils, and in Divrei Yomim it says there were barley. El alamanda amar lemikli. But if you say, according to the second explanation, that David wanted to burn the heaps of grain inside which the Plishtim are hiding, then what do we need? These two psukim. Why does one pasuk mention lentils and the other one barley? And the answer is, he'll answer you, because there were actually two stacks, there were two types of stacks of grain that were there in which Plishtim were hiding out. There were ones of barley that belonged to the Goyim, to the Plishtim themselves, and then there were ones of lentils that belonged to Jews. So therefore, Sir David needs to know about both kinds, whether he's allowed to burn them down. So the question is not so much about the barley ones then, because the barley ones, according to this, then we would say both of them, actually, both the barley and the lentils belong to Jews. So it does happen that therefore the psukim recorded in one way in one place and another way in another place, because it so happened that there were two types of heaps of produce over there, and the Plishtim were hiding out in both of them. And so the question was about both of them. So therefore, one pasuk says it one way, and another pasuk says it the other way. There is, by the way, the Ravid gives an explanation over here that there were actually multiple attacks by the Plishtim. The pasuk uses the expression that the field was malaya sa'orim or malaya adoshim, meaning that it was full of barley or of lentils, which implies that it was still growing over there. If you have a heap of it in the middle of the field, that's not the field is not full of it. So he explains that first they attacked uh, first they attacked, there was a time when where there was a time there was a battle at one point when the fields were full of grain or lentils, and then there was another time after the harvest, and therefore that would explain that, and then therefore that would explain the word malaya in the psukim, as well as you have the pasuk uses over there the word kotzer. And then in connection with the story about the water, it says that they went down to David at the time of Kotzer. So that would be that this is at a time when there was a harvest going on. In fact, the Ravid says, we're saying over here, we have the three different opinions, what happened over here, and we have to figure out, the Gemara is going to, so far, according to the third opinion, it's easy enough to understand the two psukim, according to the second one also, because there were two types of piles, but we have to figure out, according to the first opinion, how do we know there was a question of tamun? So again, we said what Marsha mentions, that it means that there were lentils inside of the barley, but the Ravid gives a different explanation, actually, that the you have to ask, why are the psukim first mentioning that? For the Gemara is going to go on to say that when the pasuk says that that Shama or Elazar saved the crops, it means he didn't allow them to burn them or to exchange them, which means that would have happened after the Shaila was asked. So why does the pasuk put the psukim put the story of the Shaila, the story of the water, afterwards? So he says that's why that itself tells us that there were, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that there were actually two questions over here, and that's precisely that, because the psukim are written out of order, therefore that shows us that there were actually separate questions over here. Okay. Anyway, so again, according to the third explanation, then we understand why there's one pasuk mentions lentils and another one barley, because the question was to exchange one for the other. According to the middle explanation, that we said that the plishtim were hiding out inside the piles, there were two kinds of piles, and the plishtim were hiding inside both of them. So the Gemara continues, b'shleimu l'manda omel mikli, according to the explanation that says that he wanted to burn the piles of grain, then we understand, hainu d'chtiv, that explains the pasuk that it says there, v'yisyatzev b'secha chelka v'yatzileha, that he, Shama, or Elazar, stood, or both of them, stood in the middle of the field and saved it. So what does that mean? He saved it. It means that he prevented them from burning it. Because what David figured, as we're going to go on to say in the Gemara, Given that the Sanhedrin is telling him, usually such a thing is also, because you're not allowed to be matzalatzim, mamon chaver, but you have a special heter because you're a king, David didn't want to take advantage of that heter, and therefore the soldiers stood over there guarding it to prevent anybody from burning it down. But if you say according to the opinion that he wanted, that they just wanted to exchange it, what's the saving? And the answer is that's the saving. That they didn't allow them to exchange it. They didn't allow them to take the barley for the animals for David's army and exchange it later on for the lentils. Now Tosfos points out the fact is the psukim say vayatzileha by both the lentils and the barley. So Tosfos explains that actually both of them were saved. It means they saved the barley by not taking it to feed the animals, and they saved the lentils in the sense Tosfos says somebody else had already been zoicha in those lentils because the plishtim had run away, and therefore or even if they belonged to Jews, they were hefker because the Jews there had given up once the plishtim assembled over there. They figured we're never going to see those lentils again, so therefore they were miyayish on them. So people had taken them. And these soldiers saved them in the sense that they didn't allow other people to go and then take them. They said they're no longer hefker, they're no longer government property because people have already taken them for themselves. Tosfos actually says that Marsha says on this Tosfos, maybe it doesn't mean that they were actually literally zoicha in it. Once other people took those lentils, then of course you can't take it from them to repay the barley. What it means is rather that it means that they're available for the taking. And in the end, in fact, other people did end up taking them. And in that sense, vayetzileha, that it didn't become government property to then be used to repay other people, but rather it was available for other people to take. So that was the vayetzileha. Next, So the Gemara continues, Bishlema Hani Tauti. Okay, it's easy enough to understand according to these two opinions, whether we're saying that they wanted to burn the grain or whether they wanted to exchange one for the other. Then we understand Heinrichtiv, Tre Kroy. That explains why one pasuk mentions barley and the other one mentions lentils. Whether we say because they wanted to burn both of them. So the question would be, in other words, that you have both barley, which is cheap, and lentils, which are more expensive. So they wanted to know. About both of them. And if we say that that they wanted to exchange one for the other, then they need to know whether they're able to do that. So that explains why you have two psukim like that. But according to the first opinion, according to the Nachman, who said the question was tamun in the first place, mai barilei kroy, then what do we need these psukim for? Now, Rashi makes the girsa the way we have it. My boile kroy, why do we need the psukim? Because the question is not so much, in other words, why we need two psukim, one that mentions lentils and one that mentions barley. The question would really be why we need the psukim to mention what kind of crop there was there at all. It doesn't matter whether it was barley or lentils or anything else. So there'd be no reason to mention it at all. So, in fact, the Kosei Yeshuas explains part of what Rashi means with that girsa. He's saying, in other words, the fact is that neither when it mentions barley nor when it mentions lentils does that explicitly tell us anything about tamun at all. So where are we even getting, according to that opinion, that there was a question of tamun? Tosfos says
that may be true if the halacha is the same for wheat and for barley and lentils, but since they're valued very differently, maybe the halacha is one way for barley and the other way for lentils.
Not when it comes to tamun. When it comes to tamun, there would be no reason for that. When it comes to tamun,
there would be a reason.
Because what we're saying is the point about what's the point of tamun? The point is the chachamim are saying you're potter for tamun in the sense, as we're going to learn later on. We'll learn on Samach Aleph Amud Beis. Suppose, for example, the farmer has hidden inside his stack of grain, he has tools. He has, for example, farm tools, or even he has his wallet in there or something. Where the chachamim are saying you're potter for tamun, meaning, in other words, that we consider as though that part of the pile was just full of the same content as the rest of the pile. So you have a pile over there, in other words, that you estimate by its size ought to contain 500 pounds of barley. Instead, it was actually 400 pounds of barley, and then someplace hidden inside there are farm tools. We wouldn't say, according to the Chachamim, that you have to pay for 400 pounds of barley plus the value of the farm tools. No, we just consider it as though it was 500 pounds worth of barley. Same thing would be if it was a pile of lentils. Same thing if it was a pile of anything else. So if we say...
pile of gold... hidden in a pile of barley,
then he would pay for a pile of gold. That's fine, but the point is, we wouldn't care. It wouldn't matter. I mean, obviously, the pasuk is not telling us the actual amount that they were going to have to pay. So all we'd need to know, in other words, is that there was some kind of tamun over there. It wouldn't matter for our purposes for describing the story in the pasuk whether there were barley or lentils or something else. Whatever it is, the chachamim would say that all you're chayav for is the value of what's on the outside of the pile. We're not concerned with what's inside it. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would be. So then there'd be no reason to mention specifically lentils and barley. So according to Rashi, then Rashi takes out the word today or tauti and says the question is just what we need the psukim at all. Tosfos, on the other hand, keeps the word in and says, look, I mean, we do need to have at least one of the psukim in order for it to say vayatzileha that he saved it. Meaning according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Hatzalah would be he doesn't want to be chayev to have to pay for tamun, therefore he prevented his soldiers from burning it down, or therefore according to Rashi, if we're talking about before that it was actually burnt down, then he made the mazik pay, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, he would have to pay for the tamun as well. The question would be that why would we need one pasuk to mention barley and the other one lentils? If it's a matter of tamun, then on the face of it, we don't need both of them.
How do we know the Chachamim don't make any difference between something that's very valuable and something that's relatively valuable?
I don't understand what the question is. They're saying that you're potter for tumun, meaning no matter what it is that's hidden inside the pile of grain, we're going to talk about it later on Amud Beis, they're saying you're potter for it. Because that's what the Torah says, that's how they learn from the word kama, that you're potter from tumun. We are going to learn later on the Chachamim draw a distinction between, for example, if a person set a fire and burnt down somebody's house, then we don't say tumun, then we're going to say yachayev for the contents of the house, because people normally put things inside houses, but people don't normally put things inside stacks of grain. But we'll talk about that later on.
Well, there is then the difference.
Okay, so there's that distinction, but still not to the extent where we're going to have the pasuk telling us there was barley and there was lentils, and we're going to say that makes that much of a difference. Fine, we could say even like Maharsha says, it means that there were lentils inside the barley. But fine, the question is if it's a more general question of tumun, then why does the pasuk need to tell it like that in the first place? And the answer is
well, that may be because the relative valuation of both is close to each other, as opposed to if you had, as you just mentioned, a house with a
that's
valuable
fine, but
property.
We're not talking about a house. It would have been enough to say that there was a field over there and he saved the field or something. Anyway, mm-hmm. So let's continue. Omalach, so the answer is, Reb Nachman will tell you, Tomun b'chod mehanach kamaboyle. As a matter of fact, David had two shilas. Not he's saying that he had the shila of tumun, but in addition, he agrees that he had one of the other shilas as well, as far as exchanging or as far as burning. So according to Reb Nachman, that's why you need the psukim. That's why you need, because the fact is, we do have each of the other questions necessarily involves lentils and barley, and therefore he asks that. But in addition, Reb Nachman is saying he's also asking about tumun. So again, where he's getting exactly that we learn that the we learn that there was tumun involved. So Maharsha points out this point that you have there. It could have been a pile of lentils that was covered with barley on the outside, and the question would be: would you just pay the equivalent value of a pile of barley, or would you also be chayev to pay for the lentils inside? That would be Rabbi Yehuda versus the Chachamim. And then you have different other points that we talked about before. For example, what the Ravid says: the very fact that the psukim are written out of order, that first it mentions him saving, and only then does it mention the shayla, goes to show that there were actually two different shilas over here. Okay. Anyway, so Reb Nachman has no problem then understanding why there were these two psukim, because again, one of them is talking about one shila, and the other is talking about the other. Okay. The Gemara continues. Bishleima l'mandama hani tauti. Now, according to the two opinions that he wanted to burn or he wanted to exchange, hainu d'chtiv, then we understand what the pasuk means when it says, so the pasuk continues, when these soldiers brought the water back to David, the pasuk says David did not want to drink them, and he poured them out as a libation to Hashem. And he said, Hayitochen, that I should drink such water that was brought at the risk of people's lives. So in simple pshat, again, it means, you know, to begin with, David never asked them to bring the water in the first place. He was only talking wistfully like that. I remember the good old days. They on their own initiative to show how devoted they were to David, they went and brought it. And David said, it's not appropriate to actually go and drink this water. I never asked for it in the first place. If you're going to be bringing water with such risk of life, then it should be used as a curb. There's actually, I think, Targum on the Pasuk says that actually he used it for Nisuch HaMayim, which then would make it worthwhile to, at least it would make the Mesiras Nefesh worthwhile. But here, the Gemara is understanding, again, since we're talking about that the water means a Shaila, so what would it mean that he didn't want the water and he poured it out to Hashem? So if we say that it means he's asking a Shaila whether he's allowed to do something, and we're saying he was given a special heter because he was a king. Well, then, that explains the pasuk. V'loy ova David l'shtoisam. The pasuk doesn't actually say David, whatever. V'loy ova l'shtoisam. David did not want to drink the water, meaning, Omer, he said, kiven de'ika isur alo nichali. Since there is an isur involved, then I don't want to take advantage of the fact that I'm a king. Yes, in principle, the Beis Din is saying I'm a king and I would be entitled to take advantage of this heter, but I don't want to do that. So therefore I don't want to use that heter. But according to Reb Nachman, that he's asking about tumun, that he's not asking whether he's allowed to do something. The fact is, they answered him according to what they have learned. They answered him a psak halacha, either according to Reb Yehuda or according to the Chachamim. What do you mean that he didn't want to accept what they're saying? How could that be? If they're telling him a psak halacha, that's the psak halacha. Now, Tosfos says, okay, still, we just said Reb Nachman agrees that there was one of the other Shilas as well. Nevertheless, the Gemara is assuming that when it says V'loy Ovel L'shtoysam, means he didn't want to accept the Psak Halacha at all. So therefore, so you can't say that he, so why wouldn't he accept the part about Tomun when that's a plain Psak Halacha? It's not saying what he's allowed to do or not. Now Tosfos says before at the beginning of the sugya, we said Rashi explained that the story was, according to Reb Nachman, that Jewish soldiers had actually burnt down somebody's field with Talmud over there, or somebody's field or somebody's stack of grain or whatever with Talmud over there, and the question was whether they're chayiv or not. Tosfos says, based on what we're saying over here, it can't be, because then the Gemara could very easily say, well, it means that David didn't want to take advantage of the heter and he insisted on paying for the damage. For the Tomun as well, or maybe not for the Tomun, but he insisted on paying for the damage, at least, depending who the halacha is like. But according to the other opinions, that there was only one Shiloh, then it's very easy to understand what he's not accepting. But according to this, at least the question of whether you chayev for Tomun or not, how could we say he didn't accept it? And the answer is, according to Reb Nachman, it doesn't mean he didn't accept what the Sanhedrin said. It means Dolay Aminu Mishmaihu, means in the future when he sent over this halacha, he did not say it over in the name of these three Giborim who had risked their lives to bring him the answer. Omar, because he says Kaf Mekublanim based Dinish or Shmuel Hamasi, I have the Kabbalah from Shmuel Hanavi, who was David's Rebbe, Shekolam Moisa Atzma Lomus Al Divrei Torah. Anybody who is Moisa Nefesh for words of to die for words of Torah, you don't say a matter of halacha in his name, because there are things for which it's appropriate to be Moshe Nefesh, but not to the extent of going like this to go and bring a psak halacha from one place to another. So therefore, so David says, then they acted inappropriately, and therefore they don't deserve to have this halacha said in their names. Ben Yehoyada says a vort on it. He says that we know that when you say a halacha in the name of a particular Talmid Chacham, then his lips move in the grave, even after he passes away and he's buried, still his lips move and he has enjoyment from the fact, well, these people are acting as though their life is of no concern for them. They don't hold of the concept of chai behem v'lo shiyomos behem. Therefore, they don't deserve to have that so to speak, life after death of having the halacha said in their names afterwards. Marsha says it somewhat differently. Maybe here, when they acted inappropriately like that, Geula doesn't deserve to come through them. He says Shluchim Mitzvah in Nizokin, but when there's a clear and present danger, it's different, and that's how it is over here when there is a Plishti army camped over there. So according to Reb Nachman, that's what it means that David didn't want to drink them. Means that he didn't want to, not that he didn't accept the Psak Halacha, the Beis Din had told him one way or the other about Tomun, but that he didn't want to say this Halacha over in the name of the Giborim who had risked their lives to bring it. Well, the Gemara says, the Pasuk continues, Vayasich Oisam Hashem, he poured out the water in honor of Hashem. So B'shleim Lamanda Omahani Tauti, according to the other two opinions about burning the grain or about exchanging the grain. So when we say Vayasa Choisam Lashem means Minshum Da'ov L'Shem Shemayim, means he's acting L'Shem Shemayim. He doesn't want to take advantage of a heter that would be available to him as a king. El Olamanda Oma Tomun Ba'esh, but according to Reb Nachman, who says that the question, or at least one of the questions, was Tomun, my Vayasa Choisam Lashem, then what does it mean? We can say it means he didn't want to say the halacha in the name of the Giborim. So how do you explain when the Pasuk is saying that he poured them out to Hashem? And the answer is Damrino Mishmata Gemara. The answer is, according to that, it would mean he did say over this halacha in the future about Tomun, but instead of saying it over in the name of the Giborim, which, as we said, he said they acted inappropriately and therefore they don't deserve that, he just said it over anonymously as something that was taught in Torah. So therefore, in effect, by Yasech Hoysam Lashem, like he's not saying it in the name of a boss of a dumb, he's saying it in the name of Hashem. So we learn from this. So we learn from this story. There's a certain halachas about details of matzalatim and mum and chavere and other such things. Mishnah says, continuing on the dinim of fire, over the gedur shu gavoya dalar amos. If the fire goes over a fence which is 4 amos tall, and we mean 4 amos, and we mean 4 amos above the firewood or whatever that's there to fuel the fire, or it crossed over a public road, which is usually 16 amos wide, or nahar, or across the river, potter, then the one who started the fire is potter, because that's similar to what we had in the previous Mishnah about it being spread beruach she'ena metzuya. Under normal circumstances, the fire would never be able to get past such things, so therefore he's potter. And in fact, Tosfos points out, and we're going to learn in the Gemara, you have those different kinds of fire. You have a fire that's more where the flames are more or less vertical, versus you have one where the flames are more going horizontally. So Tosfos points out that actually, when we say we're going to talk about the fence being higher than the fire, it has to be taught, if it's any higher than the fire, then it doesn't really matter what shape the fire is. So then the distinction that the Gemara is going to say about that is not really going to hold. And also, of course, when we say that it's higher than the fire, we mean it's also higher than whatever fuel there might be over there for the fire, wood or thorns or whatever. Obviously, otherwise the fire could easily leap over. Well, the Gemara asks, "Well, Tanya, over a geder shul gavaya arba amas chayev." Don't we learn in a brisa that if the fire crossed over a fence, and by the way, geder in Gemara terminology usually means a stone fence, so it's fairly fireproof. So the Braisa says, if it crossed over a fence, which is 4 amas tall, chayev, then he is chayev for what happens as a result of it, because he didn't make enough of a fire break. So how does that fit with our Mishnah that said 4 amas, your potter? So the answer is, Amar Rapapa. Rapapa says both the Mishnah and the Braisa mean the same thing. They're just phrasing it different. Tana didan kachoshev milamayu lamata. Or the Tana of our Mishnah is going from higher to lower. He's saying, sheish amas potter. If the wall were to be 6 amas tall, 6 amas above the fire, then he'd be potter. Chomish amas also potter. Ad arba amas potter, until you get down to 4 amas, then he's potter. If the fence is any lower than 4 amas above the fire or above the fuel, then he would in fact be chayav. So the Tana of the Mishnah means, when he says 4 amas, he means 4 or more. The Tana of the Braisa is doing the other way around. He's starting from less to more. If the wall were to be 2 amas tall, then he would be chayev. Shalosh amas chayev. Ad arba amas chayev. If the wall is any shorter than 4 amas, then he's going to be chayev. Only if both the Tana of the Mishnah and the Braisa are both saying that 4 amas is potter, the Tana of the Braisa means up till 4 amas he's going to be chayev. If it's exactly 4 amas, then he'll be potter. Actually, the Shita Mukabetzis brings from the Ra'ah, who wonders, E.F. Shalat Samson, how can we really tell, if the wall is 4 amas tall? Is it really 4? Is it 3.99? Or is it 4.01 or something? It seems like a bit of an odd way to say it, he says, but that's what we're saying. Okay. However, Omar Rav, lo shonu ela b'keilachas. Sorry, I skipped a couple of lines. Omar Rava, dalat amas cha'omru, depotter afilu b'sidei koitzin. When we say that he's potter, if the wall is 4 amas tall, that would be, even if we're talking about there was a field of thorns over there. Different mafoshim talk about, are we talking about which side are the thorns on? Rashi explains that we mean the thorns are on the other side of the fence, even though it would be very easy, if the fire does get across, it would be very easy for it to catch on to the thorns because they're dry. Nevertheless, we're still saying that he's potter because there was a fence there, which should have been enough to stop the fire. And the only reason it got across was because of a ruach she'ena metzuya. The Rashba, on the other hand, has an understanding that it means even if your field is full of thorns and therefore you have a lot of fuel for the fire, nevertheless, if there's a wall over there 4 amas tall or taller, then you're potter. So the Papa says what it means is, in other words, when we talk about 4 amas, then means the height of the wall would have to be four amas above the thorns. Otherwise, he is going to be chayev, because then less than 4 amas is not going to be enough to prevent the fire from spreading. Omer Rav, lo shonu ela b'keilachas. Now Rav says when we're talking about the Mishnah, when we're talking about that your potter in certain cases, depending on the various fire breaks that it mentions in the Mishnah, is only when the flame of the fire is kilachas, when it's flaming basically vertically. So things like we mentioned in the Mishnah, a wall of 4 amas or a wide road or a river or whatever would be enough to stop it. But if the fire is bending downward, if it's the kind of thing where the wind is the wind is bending down the flame, and therefore the flame is moving in different directions, and in fact it actually says even what you have is like you may have little bits of flammable material are getting detached from the fire by the wind and then going to other places. So then afilo ad mea ama chayev, then he would be chayev even if there was a fire break of 100 amas, because that's not going to prevent it from spreading. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation of nichpefes is that not we're talking about the wind is blowing on the fire and when bending down the flame and causing it to and then causing it to be more horizontal, but rather we're talking about the flame itself is a low flame of the kind which is just it's creeping along on the ground and consuming grasses or whatever as it's going along. So now, even if it goes across a very wide Rosh Hashanah, then he would be chayim. Tosfos says, on the other hand, mainly what we're talking about over here, Rav's distinction over here is talking about the case of the fence. He's not necessarily talking about the case of the. He's not necessarily talking about the other kinds of fire breaks over here. So that's Rav. Shmuel says the other way around. The Mishnah is talking about a nechpefes fire, one which is being blown down by the wind, or which is creeping along the ground, according to Rashi's two definitions. But Shmuel says, on the contrary, if the flame was vertical, I feel a kol shehu potter, then you don't need very much of a fire break at all. Even if you only have a kol shehu of area around it, of bare ground around it, then you'd be potter, because a kailachas fire is not going to spread like that if there's nothing in the area for it to consume. So the Gemara says, Tanya kavasei de Rav. Now, normally in Dini Mominus, the halacha is like Shmuel, but here we have a braisa like Rav, and therefore the halacha ends up being like him. When do we have the distinctions that we said in our Mishnah? Only when the fire is vertical, but if it's being bent downward, or bent or creeping, according to the two explanations in Rashi, the eitzim metzuyimla, and there's wood available in the area to feed it, then he's going to be chayev, even if it's spread 100 mil, miles and miles, because we're talking about a low flame like that, which is easily able to spread from one place to another, and therefore, as long as there's not enough of a break, as long as there's wood or other fuel available for it, then he'd be chayev no matter what. Continues the Braisa. On the other hand, though, if the fire crosses over a river or a shlulis, which we're going to say soon, we're going to explain soon what a shlulis is. So if it crossed one, shem rechavim ches amos, which are 8 amos wide, potter, then he'd be potter because those already have water in them, and you wouldn't expect the fire to spread across them. So we see the Braisa is making the distinction between kailachas and nichpefes, and saying by kailachas you need the minimum amounts in our Mishnah, but nichpefes you need even more than that. That fits with what Rab is saying. Again, you have the two explanations of what nichpefes are, and you also have the point between Rashi and Tosfos. Are we talking about to begin with when Rab is making this distinction? Does he mean as far as any of these kinds of fire breaks according to Rashi, or are we talking strictly as far as the fence? So then, in that case, Tosfos says then the Braisa wouldn't be talking about exactly the same case as Rav, because the Braisa is talking about more where the fire spreads along the ground. But nevertheless, we see that Rav is saying that the Mishnah is talking about Kailachas, and the Braisa says the same thing. The Braisa just makes a different distinction as far as the fire spreading along the ground. Okay. We said in the Mishnah Derech HaRabim, we said that if a fire crosses a Derech HaRabim, you potter, Man Tana, so which Tana is it that says that? Amar Rava, Rabbi Eliezer. That would be specifically according to Rabbi Eliezer, Detnan, as we learn in a Mishnah on Omid Beis, Rabbi Eliezer, Amar Sheish Esri Amas, Kederech Roshos HaRabim, potter, that if forces a derech harabim, which is the equivalent of a roshos harabim, which is 16 amos, then he would be potter. So therefore, now what? So what's the point? In other words, so Tosfos points out the point of that would be therefore that our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, and then in the next Mishnah we have a Machlokas, which is to say the Halacha is not like it. Sometimes we find that you have Stam Bachakach Machlokas, and the rule is Rebbe wrote the Mishnayos in that order to show the Halacha is not like that. And in fact, except for the matter of the fence over here, four amos, the poskim don't bring the rest of the details that we mentioned over here, because according to them, there is a matter of the river, but not as far as, for example, the derech harabim or whatever, because precisely because we're saying that's only according to Rabbi Eliezer. With that said, the Maharshal has a different girsa over here, that the word is not detnan, but rather detanya. And he says it's not quoting the Mishnah. It's not quoting the Mishnah on Amud Beis and saying and mentioning Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. He brings this girsa, and the Pnei Yeshua explains that the difference is in the next Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer is saying you're potter, whereas in our Mishnah you're saying so. In other words, so what would happen, for example, that so you have let's say, for example, you lit a fire in the middle of your field and there's nothing there in the field. So outside of 16 amos you're potter, but then in our Mishnah you're saying that only if it has to actually skip over an actual derech harabim. So therefore, the Gemara is saying that Rabbi Eliezer doesn't make the distinction that we just said between a vertical and a horizontal fire. Either one, he says that it wouldn't go 16 amos away. Okay, we said oynohar. Another possibility is if the fire crosses a river. So we said he's potter. So what do we mean by a river? Rab ama nohar mamsh. Rav says it means an actual river that has water in it. Well, actually, we're going to see. On the contrary, a river doesn't necessarily always have to have water in it. It could be a dried up river. Anyway, Shmuel Amar Arisa de Deloi. Shmuel says it means a canal from which people draw water to irrigate their fields. So Manda Amar Nahar Mamish. Rav, who says that it means an actual river, would say Afagab the Lekamaya, even if there's no water in it right now, it's wide enough, so therefore it's considered a derech harab. Now, Tosfos says, we just said a derech harab, and we need 16 amos. Why here with a river would 8 amos be enough? So Tosfos says, because the riverbed is deeper, and also it's cooler, because there usually is water in it, so therefore it's therefore 8 amos would be enough, 8 amos of that would be enough for a fireplace. Omanda Amar Risa de Deloy, whereas Shmuel, who says that we're talking about an irrigation canal, only Iisbe Maya Ein Avalesbe Maya Loy. He would say only if there's actually water in it, then you potter when it's 8 amos wide, but not if it has no water. In other words, the point is, an Arisa de Deloy almost always has water in it. If not, then it's not serving its purpose. So therefore, he says that the Mishnah is implying that the thing actually has to have water in it in order for him to be potter. Okay. Now we mentioned a shlulis in the Braisa, so now the Gemara is going to bring a Mishnah from Peah that also mentions this word shlulis and discuss the meaning of it. Tnanhos, and we learn in a Mishnah in Masech Peah, the Elu Mafsikin LePeah. The following things divide up a field as far as Peah, meaning we know the Torah says a farmer has to leave Peah from his field for the poor people. Now you can't say if you have a whole bunch of fields that you're going to be allowed to leave one Peah and it'll cover all of them. You have to have separate Peahs for separate fields. So when do we consider that a field is broken up into? What kinds of features divide up a field into two? So the Mishnah starts mentioning Hanachal, if you have a stream running between them. Or it may not even be a stream. It actually says the Nachal Omoik, a deep Nachal. So in that case, a Nachal may just be a valley. Anyway, Vashlulis and a Shlulis, which is the same word we just had in the Braisa, so we're going to have to define that in a minute. The Derech HaYochid, the Derech HaRabim, or a private road or a public road, all of those divide up a field as far as Peah, meaning, in other words, that the farmer, even though he owns the land on both sides of one of these things, he's going to have to give a separate Peah from each one. So, my shlulis, what do we mean with this word shlulis? Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Mokim Shemeg Shomim Sholol and Shom. It means a place where rainwater collects, so like a depression in the ground where water collects. How does Sholol come to mean collect? Rashi says, first of all, you have an expression in a Gemara in Beitzim, in a Shalol Shal Beitzim, referring to the ovaries of a bird where the eggs are developing. So you have like a cluster over there that where they develop inside. So therefore, the word Shalol can mean a cluster. So here it means a gathering of water. Or another point, Rashi says, you have the word Shalol meaning spoils that you gather from a war. Either way, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, therefore, it means a place where water gathers. On the other hand, Rabbi says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that a shlulis is a water channel, a canal that distributes shalol to its banks. Meaning, in other words, that people use it to water to irrigate their fields. That's according to Rashi. According to Tosfos, what it means is, in other words, that when the water level in this canal overflows, then it starts filling up the water pits and other kinds of things, or the other kinds of water storage places that are near it. So what's the difference between the explanations? The Gemara says, the opinion that says that a shlulis is a natural depression where water collects, kol shekein amas hamayim, he would say all the more so, and amas hamayim divides one field from the other. Because you built it there for that purpose. And also there's the fact that sometimes, as Tosfos says, it overflows and provides water for other places. But Rabbi Yochanan, who says that it means a canal, he would say, he would say that no, just the natural depression in the ground where water collects, that Rabbi Yehuda had said in the name of Shmuel, he would say that does not divide up the field for Peah, even if it extends from one side of the field to the other, because he would say, Dahanu Bogni Da'aramiku, such things are just called the containers of the land. People just think of them as they're part of the land. They're just as a natural thing. A land is going to have depressions here and there, and you're going to be able to store water in them and use them and use them to water the field. So it's not it's not an artificial thing that was created. It was a natural depression, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan would say that that's not considered a division of the field as far as pay. The Ra'ah brings, the Shittim HaKubetzes brings from the Ra'ah, the Machloikas is only as far as Peah, as far as a fire. It doesn't make a difference. Either one is considered a Shlulis for this purpose, as long as it's wide enough. And as the Braisa said, therefore, if the fire crossed the Shlulis, which is wide enough, 8 Amos or more, then you're punter. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamadlik B'Seich Shaloi, if a person lights a fire in his property, Ad Kama Tavar Hatleika, how far? So now he lit a fire. He didn't take care to put enough of a fire break around it. Ad kama taver hadleika. How far can it be that the fire spreads and he's going to be chayav? Rashi says, as we just learned before, if the fire is nichpefes, then none of these figures are going to apply. We're talking about only when it was kelachas, only when it was a vertical flame. So at what point, how far out do we consider him liable for the damages that were caused by his fire? So Rabbi Lozman and Azariah Omer, Royan Oisa Kilu Be'emza Beis Kur. Rabbi Lozman and Azariah says, we have to consider the fire as though it was in the middle of a base core. A base core is an area where you can plant a quart of grain. So it means that it was an area defined as 75,000 square amos. It made into a square that would come to a square about 273 and some amos on a side. So around 400 to 500 feet, depending on the different poskim. So now what we do is we cut that in half. We imagine as though the fire was in the middle of that area. So now if anything outside of 137 amos and change, then he would be potter, because it's not expected that the fire would spread like that. So even though he lit it in his property, therefore he'd be potter for anything that was destroyed within that base core, which doesn't belong to him, he'd be chayev, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but anything outside it, he'd be potter. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, tes zayin amos, Rabbi Eliezer says that it's a lot smaller than Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, 16 amos, the width of a Rishus Rabbim. Rabbi Akiva Omer Chamishim Amos. Rabbi Akiva says the amount is 50 amos. Rabbi Shimon says, listen, after all, the pasuk says Shalom Yishalom Amaver Es Habeira. The pasuk says the one who lit the fire has to pay. So it all depends on It all depends on the fire. It all depends on the type of fire and the and then and what's available for it and so forth. Well, the Gemara asks, "Valesle the Reb Shimon shiur b'dleika? Does Reb Shimon not hold of the concept of a minimum shiur as that's necessary around a fire that you'd be chayiv for whatever happens within that and potter outside of that?" It sounds like Tosfos is saying. It sounds like Reb Shimon is saying that even if, no matter how far the fire spread, even if it was completely unexpected that it should spread that far, you'd still be chayev because the pasuk says shalom yishalom amaver sabera. But that's not logical. Why should you say that he's chayev if it was much further away? And after all, v'hatnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Baba Basra, lo yamid adam tanur b'seich habayis. A person is not allowed to set up an oven in his house. Rashi says over here we're talking about the other people in the city can prevent him from doing this unless he has the space around it, as we're going to say in the continuation of the Mishnah. Tosfos says we're talking about that you have a two-story house and one person lives on the ground floor and the other one on the second floor. So we're saying the second floor neighbor can prevent the first floor neighbor from putting up an oven unless he has these amounts of space around it. Elim can yeshar gabed goyva arba amos, unless you have a minimum height from the top of the oven until the ceiling of 4 amos, so the ceiling doesn't catch fire. So according to Rashi, we're talking about the people in general in town can prevent him from putting up that oven if he doesn't have that amount of space, because it could cause a fire, which is going to spread to the rest of the city. According to Tosfos, we're talking specifically the upstairs neighbor. Anyway, Tosfos actually mentions Rashi's explanation is kind of preferable because you have other examples like that in that perek above Basra, which we'll get to several months from now, Be'ez Hashem, which talks about just that point about things that people in town can prevent him from doing. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, Hoyamam Mide Ba'aliyah. What about if instead of putting the oven on the ground floor, he wants to put it on the second floor? Then he can only put it Ad Shehe Tachta Maziva Shloisha Tfachim, only if there's a thickness of plaster on the ceiling, at least on the floor beneath it, at least 3 Tfachim, where again, that way the fire won't be able to spread anyplace else. What about Uvakira? What about if instead of an oven, he wants to put up a stove, which is smaller? So then Tefach, then you only need 1 Tefach of thickness of floor. And the Mishnah continues, Im Hizik, but nevertheless, if he caused Hezik, if the fire from his oven did end up causing damage, Mishalah Masha Hizik, then he has to pay for the Hezik. Because it was, after all, his fire. But Reb Shimon Omer Nemar Shiurim Alalu Ela Sheim Hizik Potter Melashalim. Reb Shimon says the whole point of these Shiurim was only that if he causes damage, then he's Potter, because then it's considered an Oinus. So we see Reb Shimon does hold of the concept of a minimum shear, and he says as long as you have the minimum shear around your fire, then you're Potter. Whereas in our Mishnah, he seems to be saying, it all depends on the fire, meaning, in other words, it sounds like he's saying it doesn't matter, no matter what, you're going to be chayev to pay. So the answer is, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavua, Hakol Fi Goyva Hadleika. What Rav Shimon means is it all depends on the height of the fire. You always have to consider that a higher fire is more likely some part of it may break off some of the material some of the hot air that's burning as the fire may break off and go someplace else and start a new fire. So therefore he would say, Hakol Fi Hadleika, you have to consider the size of the flame. When it comes to an oven, it's small enough, the flame inside it is small enough that a break of 4 amos or 3 tefachim, as the case may be, is enough. But here you're talking about an open fire, so therefore he's going to say it really depends on the size of the fire. Oh, so the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha K'Rab Shimon, that the Halacha is like Rab Shimon, B'chein Amar Rabbi Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Halacha K'Rab Shimon. So everybody agrees that Shmuel is saying the Halacha is like Rab Shimon. Now, with that said, though, so does that mean that Rav Shimon disagrees with everything that we said so far? So the Rif holds that, yeah, we always have to, the Rif and the Rambam basically hold that way, and therefore they don't bring many of the halachas that we learned on Amud Aleph over here, because they say we always have to evaluate whether we can expect that the fire would have crossed this particular barrier or open space or not. The Rosh himself disagrees, the Rosh disagrees and says that Rav Shimon is only talking about the horizontal distance, but as far as the vertical distance, he would agree that if there was a fence there 4 amos tall, or 4 amos above the flame or above the flammable material over there, then he would agree that's potter as well, no matter how big the fire is. Okay. Fine. So we'll continue with the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it tomorrow, Beis Hashem.